MacCast, Wednesday, September 25th, 2019. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. I hope you are having a great week, weekend, year, life, all of the above. Things are going pretty well for me these days, although I'm working a lot, working really hard, both on this and on other things in life. But it's always fun, and it's a great highlight of my week when I get to sit down and talk with you about Apple stuff. We get to geek out on what Apple is up to, all the latest and greatest new products. And what's exciting this week is we do have a new product to talk about. I have one in my hands now, and I'm going to give you some of my first impressions. We're also going to talk about some of the details that have come out now that they've hit the streets, specifically folks going in and breaking them. We're going to talk about breaking iPhones, new iPhones. I know it's horrific. They're expensive. A lot of people want them and can't afford them, and you've got other people just tearing them apart and breaking them down, but it's all in the name of science. So we want to know details, how durable they are, and what's inside of them. So we'll get into that in this episode. We're also going to talk about maybe what's up for the next iPhone. Yep, we're already in the rumor mill for the next iPhone. Actually, if you've been listening to the podcast, you know we've talked a little bit about the 2020 iPhone in a few episodes here and there, but we're starting to get some more details. We're also going to talk about that Mac Pro that's coming out, some news about that this week, and we got some iOS updates, so we'll dig into those and see what those look like. And that's going to probably round out the news for this week, so not a ton of stuff. Like I said, I'm going to give you my iPhone 11 Pro impressions, and then I've got a couple of iOS 13 things to talk to you about. An interesting little event, I guess this might be the right way to put it, that happened, and then a fun new feature that I am really enjoying. And that will round out this episode of the MacCast. Like I said, it should be a fun one. Might be a little bit of a shorter one. I'm kind of tired. Like I said, been working a lot, been very, very busy. But I know you're busy too. So let's just jump right into it. But before we get started, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, and that is Smile. You know, they've been with us for a long time, and we appreciate them being a sponsor of the show. Even more so, though, I appreciate their software, because Text Expander is an app that I use each and every day, and it saves me so much time. It really enhances my productivity, and it can give you a boost to your productivity as well. Basically, you take things that you type a lot, and you turn them into snippets. And actually, Text Expander will even help you, because once you have it installed, it watches what you type, and it will make these great suggestions saying, hey, you know what, Adam, you type MacCast a lot, or you type certain phrases and things a lot. Would you like me to turn those into snippets so I can save you time and save you typing? And I often say, yep, please do that. I also have a bunch of ones that I downloaded and have set up, things for like my coding. I have a lot of ones for answering your emails and stuff like that. And it just gives me back a lot of time. And that's very valuable, because life is really too short to constantly retype the same thing over and over again. Throw it in a snippet and away you go. And Text Expander is great if you run a business or you're in a company, you have a team of people. Customer support reps, people who need to send a lot of emails, anywhere you want, where you want to have consistent and reliable, accurate communication, you can use Text Expander for Teams, and then everybody can be using the same snippets, and you can share those back and forth. Also, if you're cross-platform, Text Expander is available for macOS, Windows, iPhone, iPad, Chrome, you name it. And best of all, listeners of the show, you're going to get 20% off your first year. All you have to do is visit textexpander.com/podcast to learn more about Text Expander and sign up. It's really that simple. Textexpander.com/podcast. And a huge thank you to Smile and Text Expander for their support of the podcast. What do you say we break some iPhones? Well, not actually us, but the folks over at iFixit, because, hey, iFixit going to do what they're going to do, which is tear down devices. And we have new devices for them to take a look at, both the iPhone 11 Pros and the iPhone 11, also an Apple Watch. So they did all of that, and they found a few interesting things. I think this year, a lot of the updates were somewhat iterative. I mean, we've got cool new things like the triple lens camera system on the iPhone 11 Pros, and we've got new processors and stuff like that. But as far as like big details inside when you're cracking them open, there were a couple of surprises. The iPhone 11 Pros, guess what? They found two battery connectors in there, which is new, and that was curious to them. It led them to think that maybe there were some signs of intended bilateral wireless charging. That was a big feature that many of us were expecting to come to the iPhone 11 Pro, and one that didn't. Apple didn't have it in there. Ming-Chi Kuo had said that Apple killed it at the last minute because they couldn't get the desired efficiency they wanted. And this made it look like, hey, maybe there's something going on here. They also noted that there was a mysterious board below the battery that seemed like it could also be bilateral charging related. But Rene Ritchie over at iMore says, nope, Apple did not put bilateral charging in the iPhone 11, so it can't be in there. It can't be enabled with software. A lot of people were hopeful when the iFixit report came out that, hey, maybe Apple is still planning this feature and it's something they could add with a future software update. It's looking like that is not the case. Maybe the jury's still out a little bit on it, but I tend to believe Rene. He's pretty connected in these sorts of things. So I don't think we're going to get bilateral wireless charging. I do think, and I think Rene commented on this as well, I do think that it was planned. It was something they were thinking about and trying for. I don't think it ever made it into being part of the manufacturing process. I think it was killed off maybe a little bit before that. So I don't think it made it into the phone. I think they were definitely looking into it. Beyond that, kind of the interesting battery stuff, like I said, it's got a lot of the same designs. We already talked kind of about the single-cell L-shaped battery, or what appears to be a single-cell L-shaped battery. And also, there is a slimmer logic board in there, which was slimmed down to make room for the extra camera hardware. Like I said, we've got the third lens in there. But beyond that, not a lot of big surprises inside the iPhone 11 Pro. Moving on to the iPhone 11, there were some interesting surprises in there. One was that it has the same logic board as the iPhone 11 Pro. And something interesting about this year's iPhone 11, which was the successor to the iPhone XR, is for all intents and purposes, it has all the same features as the iPhone 11 Pro, except for the telephoto camera lens. You get an ultra-wide instead of telephoto, and it only has two lenses instead of three. But you're talking about same processor. Oh, and of course, the display, right? Liquid LCD display, Retina LCD display versus OLED. But beyond those two things, all the other specifications pretty much identical, including megapixels on the cameras that are in there, a lot of the features, and it's at a lower price point. So what was interesting was when they tore it down, the iPhone 11 has the same logic board as the iPhone 11 Pro. So even on the internals, a lot of the same things going on, the same compact rectangle, what they call the double-decker design. Apple kind of folded the logic board in half, basically, and you've got stacked logic boards to fit it all in that little space. The one thing the iPhone 11 Pro or the iPhone 11 didn't have, though, was that mysterious board under the battery. So we kind of still don't know what that one's for on the iPhone 11 Pro. And on the iPhone 11, the battery is a little bit larger, about 7% larger than the iPhone XR one. But beyond that, again, not a lot of huge surprises in this teardown. But it does just reiterate and sort of reaffirm for me the fact that the iPhone 11, if you're looking for a new iPhone this year and you're not all about OLED or that extra camera or those extra camera features, and you want to save a lot of money, I think the iPhone 11 is a really great deal. The other thing that the iPhone 11 might not appeal to a number of people is the 6.1-inch display. So it kind of sits in size between the iPhone 11 Pro and the iPhone 11 Pro Max, and for that reason, it is a little bit of a big phone for a lot of people. I guess it's a mini gigantophone, if I use my own terminology. I don't really know. I personally, again, the iPhone 11 Pro size, the iPhone XS size, is about as big as I want to go in my phone. There's a lot of people that would like to see Apple go smaller, I think, but we don't have those options at this point. So it is kind of hard to make that jump to the 6.1-inch, but when you look at the amount of money you're saving, that can sway a lot of people. It almost swayed me as well. You know, if I wasn't doing it for the show, I might have gone with an iPhone 11 this year, or probably more likely just stuck with my iPhone XS. Because again, I don't think we're seeing huge jumps in iPhone functionality or features anymore. This year, a little bit of an exception with the extra camera lens. It does add some really nice camera features. So if you're big on your cell phone photography, this is a nice upgrade. But does everybody need to rush out and upgrade? I don't really think so. And if you want to save some cash, again, I think the iPhone 11 is a great option. And the teardowns just sort of reaffirm all of that. The other thing that they did tear down was the Apple Watch Series 5. And just like the specs seemed to play out on the inside, it was almost identical to the Apple Watch Series 4. About the only differences that iFixit could find were a new ambient light sensor, of course, the built-in compass module, a slightly larger battery, about 1.4% larger in the 44-millimeter model, and then some minor changes to the connector. But all the rest of the stuff, same as the Apple Watch Series 4. So another iterative update. Of course, the Apple Watch Series 5 has the always-on display technology, which is a nice feature, but it kind of makes it hard to justify upgrading from, say, a Series 3 or a Series 4 to a Series 5 unless that's just a feature that you really, really care about, because all of the other features, especially if you have a Series 4, are identical. So you probably just want to stick with that and save your pennies for a bigger update, maybe one where they add some additional health features or new sensors or something like that. I think eventually those are coming. Whether they'll happen in 2020 or later, we're going to have to wait to find out. But again, these are all great, nice products. If you're in the market for a new Apple Watch, the Series 5 is a great option. Same thing with the iPhones. But I think we're getting to the point where we're not on these every year upgrade cycles, even for a lot of tech fans. And I think that's ultimately a good thing. Always chasing the next upgrade gets a little bit chaotic and is hard on a lot of people's bank accounts. So I like to see Apple slowing down a little bit and giving people a chance to kind of spread out their Apple spending. So I think that's ultimately a good thing. Of course, the other way people break iPhones when they get released is drop testing. And Apple really, I think, in some ways threw down the gauntlet on this one, right? They claimed that this iPhone is the strongest glass ever in a smartphone. That is a big, bold statement. And of course, when you make that kind of statement, a bunch of people are going to start taking your phones and throwing them at the concrete. And that's exactly what happened. A few outlets, CNET, SquareTrade, Everything Apple Pro, PhoneBuff, Tom's Guide, they all did their own drop testing. Some of it, you know, very scientific with robots. Some of it just humans dropping phones. And there was, believe it or not, mixed results. And I think that's actually very indicative of how this goes, right? Anything can happen. Apple can say they have the strongest glass ever, but you get the right angle, you get the right amount of force, you get the right surface that you're dropping it onto. It's glass. Glass is glass is glass. It's going to shatter at some point, and you're going to have freak occurrences where it shatters in instances where you don't think it should. So in this testing, the worst was Tom's Guide and PhoneBuff, which both had their iPhone's glass crack from about hip height, about 3.5 feet. And you might be thinking, well, that's not very good. My, you know, iPhone 7 has survived falls bigger than that, and that's an older glass technology. And you'd be absolutely right. I can tell you, I've dropped iPhone 10s, I've dropped iPhone 7s, 10s, dropped them all, and mine, knock on wood, have survived. And I've dropped them mostly from about this hip height. You know, it's the kind of thing you're taking it out of your pocket, it drops. It's probably the most common drop. You can have it bounce wrong, have it land on the wrong surface, it'll crack. It just happens. So I don't think this tells us much, but it was interesting. Now, on the other side of things, or sort of in the middle, was SquareTrade. They did a series of 6-foot drop tests, and in their tests, the glass also cracked. But one thing I did notice about their test in the videos is it looked like they were dropping it onto a concrete surface that was embedded with pebbles, you know, that concrete that kind of has little stones and stuff in it. So all kinds of pointy up, jagged things, or even just smooth bumps, right? It wasn't an even concrete surface. A lot of the other tests were like polished concrete, and the phones seemed to fare better when it was a flat, smooth surface, tile, something like that, versus something a little more rough like concrete or asphalt. You know, you get something jutting up right into the display, yeah, it's likely going to crack. The iPhone 11 Pro, though, in SquareTrade's tests, did survive what they call the tumble test. They basically put it in this kind of dryer-like thing and spin it around, and this was the first time ever that an iPhone survived that test. Now, they did test an iPhone 11 and an 11 Pro Max in that tumble test as well, and both of those did crack. So, you know, results are varying. And then some of the other outlets, CNET and Everything Apple Pro, they were able to do 10-foot drop tests without having the glass crack on their test models. So I think it goes to prove that, you know, varying situations, varying experiences, a lot of times it just comes down to luck of the draw on these things. You know, I have no doubt this is the strongest glass Apple has ever put in a phone. Is it the strongest ever in a smartphone? Very likely. You know, they work with Corning to custom design this glass. I'm sure it's very, very well made. At the end of the day, though, like I said, it is glass. If you are concerned about it, it's something that you worry about, get a really good case to protect it. You're going to want to do that. You know, don't rely on just the glass being super strong to protect you from damage. Hedge your bets a little bit and you'll be better protected. And so while the glass durability may be up for debate, the screen quality, the display quality, probably isn't at this point, because DisplayMate has awarded the iPhone 11 Pro Max screen its highest ever A+ grade. This is something that smartphones are always chasing. DisplayMate has been kind of become the standard in setting what are the best displays in smartphones on the market. And right now, the iPhone 11 Pro has that title. They say that the iPhone 11 Pro has a 71% higher peak brightness than the iPhone XS. They also noticed that it had better screen visibility and ambient light. And this was something I noticed myself. We'll talk about it later when I give you my first impressions of the iPhone 11 Pro. Some other areas where it did really, really well: lowest screen reflectance, smallest brightness variation at different viewing angles, and the highest visibility, or the highest visible rather, screen resolution. Overall translation of all of that, the display looks amazing, and it really does. And ultimately, they called it, quote, visually indistinguishable from perfect. And that is saying a lot. So it's a really nice display. I was just about to give away my first impressions, but it's a nice display. Let's just say that. And I think it's well deserving of that award. Let's move from breaking iPhones to building up iPhones, or at least building up expectations for next year's iPhone, the 2020 iPhone. Yep, it's already begun. And who are we hearing rumors from? Who else? It's Ming, right? Our buddy Ming-Chi Kuo. He is scooping the dirt on what the next iPhone is going to be. And he's actually saying it's going to go a little bit retro, that we're going to get a new metal frame chassis, taking some design notes from, believe it or not, the iPhone 4. Yeah, remember the square band? Yeah, he says that is making a comeback in 2020 with a radical new design. And Kuo also calls it a more complex segmentation design. And the reason for that is likely the 5G modem chip that's expected to be in the 2020 iPhone. So they're going to redo the design a little bit to allow for better antenna reception and transparency through the chassis, right? So they're going to kind of break it up a little bit more, segment it a little more, mold that with the glass and the square band for a great new design. So interesting that they would go that route. I kind of would welcome that. I think the iPhone 4 was one of the nicest looking phones that Apple ever put together. I like the new ones a lot with the glass, you know, and the sort of rounded band around the edge, but I kind of like the square one. I think it kind of accentuated the phone. I liked those flat edges. They just, something about them felt really good to me. So I enjoyed that design. I will look forward to seeing that maybe make a return with maybe a little more modern twist. I think we're going to see maybe a merging of the two designs a little bit with the curved glass and the flat edges. And it'll be interesting to see. It's always interesting to see what Apple comes up with, right? He also says, or Kuo had also predicted in the past, that the 2020 models might feature some new display sizes. You may remember this from a while back. He says that we're going to get a smaller phone and a larger phone. It's looking like the mid-range model, what we call the iPhone 11 right now, the 6.1-inch model, that's going to stay the same size. But the iPhone 11 Pro in 2020, which I would assume would be the iPhone 12 Pro, might have a 5.4-inch display instead of a 5.8-inch display. So I don't know if that would be enough of a size reduction to appease the folks who still want a 4-inch iPhone, but it might get a little bit smaller. And I don't know how I feel about that. I've kind of gotten used to the 5.8-inch size, but, you know, I'll reserve reservations to see, one, if it happens, and two, what that looks like. But on the upper end, on the max end, they're going to go double max? I don't know, 6.7 inches on the high end, according to Ming-Chi Kuo. And the other big news, although not that surprising, is that all the 2020 models will be OLED displays. So we'll probably say goodbye to the liquid retina display on the iPhone 11 and welcome an OLED display on the iPhone 12. And then, of course, the other rumor we'd heard about for 2020 iPhones is that the rear-facing camera system will have a time-of-flight 3D camera system in it to help with augmented reality, virtual reality, and those sorts of applications in iOS. So that's kind of the latest in rumors on the 2020 iPhone. I'm sure we've got another whole entire year ahead of additional rumors, and they're going to be in flux and changing. But for right now, that's what we're hearing. It's official. This week, we heard that the Mac Pro, Apple's 2019 Mac Pro, that beast of a cheese grater, is going to be U.S. made. It's going to continue to be U.S. made. Apple announced that it will continue to assemble the Mac Pro in the same facility that they had been using for the 2013 edition of the Mac Pro, that facility in Austin, Texas. So it will be continued to be manufactured there. They also said that the value of American-made components in the 2019 Mac Pro will also be increased. It'll be 2.5 times greater than that of the 2013 model. This, again, is according to Apple. They say that the U.S. components are actually coming from manufacturers in 8 different states, including Arizona, Maine, New Mexico, New York, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Texas, and Vermont. And they also gave some indication that tariff exemptions for non-US components used in the making of the Mac Pro helped them make the decision to keep the assembly in the US. Apple had applied for exemptions on 18 different types of, or rather 15, excuse me, different types of components in the Mac Pro, and they were granted exceptions on 10 of them. So great news that manufacturing of the Mac Pro will continue to stay in the US. Unfortunately, though, with this news, we did not get any kind of official announcement on the exact release date of the Mac Pro. That has been in question for, what, years now? Apple keeps teasing us. All we have is coming this fall. So it'll be sometime between the time you're hearing this podcast and the end of the year. That is guaranteed. I don't think Apple's going to miss that date. If they do, I will be shocked and in awe. This has been a long time coming. I think they can't miss the fall release date, but we'll have to wait and see. At least we know where they're going to be made. And then finally in the news for this week, Apple released some new operating systems along with their new devices. Well, I guess a few weeks after the release of the new devices, iOS 13.1 update came out, tvOS 13, and probably the big one a lot of you have been waiting for, iPadOS. So let's talk about these a little bit. iOS 13.1, that update to iOS 13 brings some stability and performance improvements, of course, security and bug fixes, but also brings back some features that were removed during the beta period. Shortcuts automations, sharing ETA and Apple Maps among a couple of those features. It also adds the new AirDrop interface that takes advantage of the U1 chip in the new iPhone, so the ultra wideband stuff that can kind of point your iPhone at someone you want to AirDrop with, and it'll bring them to the top of the AirDrop list because it knows which direction you're pointed in and how far away that person is. I would assume that if they have another iPhone 11 or 11 Pro. So they're doing that, and another nice little enhancement in here is the glyph icon in the volume heads-up display. If you haven't seen the new volume controls in iOS 13, I think they're great, a great improvement over the giant sort of volume button that used to cover up everything, right? Now you get kind of this volume bar on the side, and then it shrinks down to a little one as you continue to adjust the volume. Where, well, when you adjust the volume, there's a little icon there. There's a little glyph of a speaker, I think it is. And with this update, they added, if you have AirPods or PowerBeats, and those are connected, you're going to get that as a little icon that instead of just a generic speaker icon. So nice little enhancement there. A lot of little things like that in the iOS 13.1 update. And that is out and available now. Of course, the big update that everybody was waiting on was iPadOS version 13.1, and it landed. You might be thinking, hey, Adam, I thought that was coming out on the 30th. Yeah, it landed earlier than expected. Earlier in the week, Apple announced that it was going to come out on September 24th instead of the 30th, so you can go out and grab it now in case you missed it, because it is a really great update for iPad. I think one of the best new features is the multi-app functionality. To have multiple apps be able to be launched at the same time, or multiple instances, rather, of the same app launched at the same time, or paired, more importantly, in split view with different apps, so I can now have, you know, Notes in Safari, I can have Omni Outliner in Safari, I can have my calendar in Safari, all of those things I can have up all at once, and I can switch between those. I can also have two Safari browsers side by side, and I can have multiple instances of that. And on top of that, I can have a slide over, and I can have multiple instances of things in slide over, and I can switch between all of them and go back and forth. It really is amazing. It adds a lot to the productivity in the iPad. Of course, there's a bunch of other great features like the new stuff in the file system, a new redesigned Photos, Maps. We talked about the look around feature that is coming. It's in San Francisco? Am I remembering this right? It's in Hawaii. I know that. Las Vegas. And I think San Francisco, if I'm remembering right. Just three cities right now, but it is going to be expanding. Great new feature. It's super awesome. If you haven't checked it out, check that out now. But, you know, this multiple apps together stuff, I really, really like it. And I want to give you a little tip and trick, because when I first started using it, this wasn't really obvious how you do that. But if you want multiple instances, what you can do is you can do a couple things. If you're in Safari and you have tabs, this is a cool little trick that I discovered. You can actually pull the tab off. So grab the top of the tab, sort of pull it away, and push it up toward the top of the screen. And what will happen is the main Safari window will slide down. If you let go at that point, then it will launch that tab into a new Safari instance. So now you'll have multiple instances of Safari open. And if you want to switch between those instances, you can swipe up into the application switcher, or you can find the Safari icon in your dock, tap and hold on it for a second, and then you will see an option that is show all windows. And if you tap that, it's going to show you all of the windows that have a Safari instance open in them, including multiple instances of Safari. So that's pretty cool. Also, from that app switcher, when you tap and hold that icon, show all windows, on this screen, you will see again all the windows that are open that have that app or instances of that app in them. But then in addition, in the upper right hand corner, there's a little plus button, and you can tap that plus button to launch another instance of that app. And while you're in the app switcher show all windows interface, if you want to close an app instance, you just do the thing that you're used to doing, flick up on it, flick it off the screen, and that will close it. And if you've closed instances in the past and you're in this same view, something else you'll notice is that there is a reopen closed window button, and this is really cool as well. You can tap that, and all your closed instances, including screen shared one or split screen ones, will all come rushing back into this interface, and you can get them all right back. And that's really handy if you're like, oh, I forgot I wanted to leave that one open. Boom, you can get it right back. It's just really cool. Really nice update, out and available now, so grab that. There is one bug you should be aware of in iOS 13 and iPadOS that Apple announced. If you use third-party keyboards, third-party keyboard apps or keyboard extensions, they will be granted full access even if the full access option hasn't been approved. Apple is aware of this bug, and they are planning a fix in an upcoming update. So I would imagine they'll patch this one pretty quick, because it's kind of a security issue, right? If you haven't given all access or full access to that keyboard extension, you don't want the operating system doing it for you, which is what's happening right now. So just be aware of that. If you have third-party extensions and you're worried about that, you might want to disable them or uninstall them temporarily until Apple can actually patch this bug. So that's iPadOS, rather. And then also there was an update to tvOS. tvOS 13 is out and available for the 4th-gen Apple TV and the Apple TV 4K. If you have an Apple TV 3rd generation, there also is a software update for you. Apple TV software 7.4 update. That's actually version 8.4.3 of the operating system for third-gen Apple TVs. So that is out, but I'm just going to focus on some of the new stuff in tvOS 13. It does have a new home screen. It adds the multi-user support, which is really great. You can now switch between multiple users, which means that you can each have your own up next and favorites and all that sort of stuff in the TV app. You just press and hold the TV button to pull up the control center, which will allow you to switch users. In that new control center, you can also access the date and time, the search feature, the now playing widget, your AirPlay controls, and the option to put the Apple TV to sleep. And then for me, most importantly, this update to tvOS brings Apple Arcade support. I've been wanting to play my Apple Arcade titles on my Apple TV, and now I have the ability to do it. Although when I went in to test this out, I did notice that not all the same titles that are available on my iPad or my iPhone are quite yet available on tvOS. So I'm not
so sure what that's all about. Apple made a big deal about the fact that with Apple Arcade, you'll be able to play your games across all your platforms, including the Mac, when the Mac OS update comes out. But for now, it looks like tvOS is not quite in parity with the other applications. I would imagine that's going to roll out pretty quickly. Maybe it's just a matter of those developers getting their apps up into the store for tvOS. But another thing that tvOS brings is support for Xbox wireless Bluetooth controllers and PlayStation DualShock 4 controllers. So if you have any of those, you can now pair those with your TV, with your Apple TV for playing games on Apple Arcade. And tvOS also brings in some new underwater screensavers that are gorgeous and new picture-in-picture support. So again, a lot of nice enhancements in tvOS and all of these OS updates, tvOS 13, Apple TV software 7.4 update, iPadOS, and iOS 13.1 are all out and available now. Just run your software updates on your respective devices. But with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank another show sponsor, and that sponsor is Linode. Look, if you're looking for hosting for your website, if you want to set up a gaming server, if you want to set up maybe a VPN, something like that, Linode is a great choice because they make it very easy to instantly deploy and manage an SSD server in their Linode cloud. You can get a server up and running, and I know this because I did it, in literally seconds with your choice of Linux distributions, and also they give you your choice of locations. So a lot of flexibility. It's something that I really enjoyed about using Linode. They make it super, super simple. I wanted to set up a Minecraft gaming server. Linode had a one-click install for doing that, so I was able to do it in minutes. If you want to do Ark or Terraria, they have support for that too. Another thing a lot of people like to do, how about WordPress or Drupal? They can get you up and running on that. Like I said, GitLab if you want to do version control system, OpenVPN if you want to do VPN, all of that is available, and they have a whole bunch of Linux distributions, so you can choose that as well. If it runs on Linux, basically it runs on Linode, and most distributions are available right out of the box through Linode's control panel. If you want to do a custom image or create your own, hey, you can do that as well. Basically, you can build whatever kind of server you want on Linode. They feature native SSD storage, a 40 gigabit network, and industry-leading processors, so they're fast-performing, great servers, and like I said, you can pick from any one of their 10 worldwide locations. And they just opened a new data center in Toronto, Canada. That one uses all up-to-date hardware and their next-generation network backbone. They also are planning a new data center in Mumbai, India by the end of 2019. Their pricing is simple, no surprise fees. You pay for what you want with hourly billing across all of their plans and add-on services. And you can start with something totally simple, a $5 a month Nanode plan, and you can go all the way up to a high-powered dedicated CPU plan. Their dashboard is amazing. One of the best dashboards I've seen in any hosting plan. They make it super simple to manage everything. You can upgrade, downgrade, cross-grade, add on backups, large storage volumes, load balancing, and it's all clear and concise. You can control all your servers right from there. And if you need help, hey, they've got 24/7 live customer support and a huge documentation library to help you out. So visit linode.com/maccast to set up your first Linode, and you're going to get a $20 credit when you use the promo code MACCAST2019. So linode.com/maccast. Big thanks to Linode for their support of the show. As promised, I'll give you my impressions of the new iPhone 11 Pro. I did order one. We talked about the order process and getting it in. That all went smoothly. Delivery went smoothly. And guess what? For me, the setup process went flawlessly. It was really, really great. Now, I know from some emails that not everybody had the same experience, so I'm going to share this in hopes that maybe in the future it might help some of you out, because I've done this the last couple upgrades, and I do think this is the way to transition or upgrade an iPhone at this point. It's to use your iCloud backup and just do the setup process that Apple now has built in, which is take your old phone, power it on, take your new phone, power it on, hold the two next to each other, and boom, it will ask you, hey, do you want to upgrade this phone? Yes, I do. All right, I'm going to put an image on your old phone, point the camera of your new phone at this little image. It's kind of that swirly static image, static ball. I don't know what we call it, like you would see on the Apple Watch when you set it up. Very similar process. You do that, it validates the two phones, it transfers all of your settings, all that stuff to your new device, and then starts the restore process. And it will ask you, do you want to restore from iTunes? Do you want to restore from iCloud? I like using iCloud at this point because you just tap the button, iCloud, it's all wirelessly. I don't have to go connect to my Mac. I don't have to do anything other than wait. And the wait's not too long. If you have a good Wi-Fi connection or a good internet connection, it shouldn't take you too long. I think mine took maybe 20, 30 minutes to do the whole process, and I was up and running with my new phone. About the only thing I had to do was re-log into some apps because I use Spark, a third-party mail client. I had to kind of reset that up, but they make that process pretty easy. And some of my shortcuts did break, so I had to go back into the Shortcuts app. But I think that's because they made kind of some major changes to the Shortcuts app, and it's a little bit different, a lot more powerful now, and I think a lot more integrated with the operating system. But a few of my custom ones broke. I had to reset them up, so that was a little bit inconvenient. But this was all minor stuff. The majority of the setup, the big kind of syncing everything up, getting all my apps on there, getting my wallpaper back reset, all those sorts of things, that happened all automatically. But the only other problem I had was when I first set it up, it did pop up and ask me if I wanted to kind of set up a contact information. This might have been when I first logged into Messages, and it wanted to use some of my Memoji stickers. And so I let it do that. What I didn't realize was, though, it was changing my Me card in my contacts. So it kind of set up a new one. So again, when I went to run some of my Siri shortcuts, it didn't know things like my home address anymore because that was all tied into my old contact card. So I did have to go back into contacts and reset my, or the contact settings rather, and reset my Me card. But once I did that, boom, I was back in business. But overall, great, easy process for upgrading. Now for the device itself, the iPhone 11 Pro. I absolutely love the new glass, the frosted glass texture on the back. I think it is gorgeous. It feels great in your hand. It's just kind of luscious and it's a very tactile, nice experience and a big change from the kind of slick, smooth glass of the prior generation model. I did go with the midnight green color, which I absolutely love. I think it looks better in person than it does in the images. It can kind of shift from kind of a gray color to more of a green color depending upon the light. I actually kind of like that. Some people have commented that they don't like that. I'm actually enjoying that as part of it. Now that said, I have most of it wrapped in what is probably my new favorite Apple case. I've always gone with the Saddle Brown one. This year I decided to go bright because they have the Meyer Lemon case, and I absolutely love that. I think it looks gorgeous. My only concern is how it might wear. So my Saddle Brown one, the antiquing, the patina on it is unbelievable. It's I love how that case is, and it almost made me sad to give it up for a new one. And I'm not entirely convinced that the yellow is going to look as good, you know, 2-3 years from now. But I'm going to hold judgment, obviously. I've got to use it. But for right now, I love how it looks. I think it looks really, really great. And there's a lot of great options out there. So very happy with my purchase decision, beyond the fact that it was a large cost. And I probably, again, if it wasn't for wanting to get a new phone so I could talk to you about some of the new features, specifically a lot of the camera features here on the MacCast, because I know you're going to have a lot of questions about those. I like to answer those firsthand. So having the new device is pretty important to me. If it was really just me looking at, I have an iPhone XS, should I upgrade this year? Probably wouldn't have done it. I really wouldn't. I don't think there's enough here for most people. We talked about that earlier in the show, so we don't need to get back into it. But you get my point there. But I love the phone. I think it's great. The cameras are really, really nice. Not going to deny it. It's taking great pictures. Night mode is awesome. I don't know why it took Apple so long to admit that they needed this feature, but it's getting great reviews. It's, you know, holding its own against the stuff that's in the Google Pixel and the Samsung, maybe even doing a better job in some people's opinions. I've seen, you know, arguments both ways. But I think it's great. I've looked at the photos. I've taken some wide angle and ultra wide angle ones, and everything just looks gorgeous as you would expect. I mean, it's an upgraded camera system. It is really, really good for a smartphone. Probably the best, of any smartphone, arguably, but I think definitely the best for any iPhone. One thing I did notice when I took it out of the box immediately, I noticed that it did feel heavier than my iPhone XS, but not necessarily in a bad way. It just feels really solid. Like, it is a solid chunk of phone, and that gives you that sense of quality, I really think. And then I also did, as I mentioned earlier, notice the display quality. That happened this morning, actually, when I was driving in my car, looked over at the screen, and there was some album art on it that was a mostly black album art, and it was just super rich and deep. And I was even in some pretty bright sunlight in the car, so it was looking really like the display that it looked like ink on paper. Let's just say that. Everything looked like it was right up on top of the display, and it really, really did show, and it really felt like that was an improvement over my iPhone XS. So if display quality is what you're going for, you know, we already talked about the fact that it has the best display ever in a smartphone, according to DisplayMate, I would agree with that. I think it's really, really great. But beyond those few things, again, it's a phone like any other iPhone X series or later. I think anything 10 series or later, that's a nice bump up from, say, the iPhone 7, maybe even the iPhone 8. But, you know, if you're on any one of those models, I think it's kind of a tough call to say, "Ow, you absolutely need to upgrade to this." And that's just me trying to be honest about it. If you're just a uber nerd Apple fan and you just want the latest and greatest and you can afford it, that's awesome. Go for it. These are great phones. You're not going to be disappointed. But, you know, if push comes to shove, when people ask me, do I need to spend the money on this right now? If they have other things they want to spend their money on, I say save your pennies. Put it someplace else. Enjoy the phone that you have, because all of these are great phones. So that's my opinion. Those are my first impressions. I'd love to hear yours. If you have comments, opinions about the iPhone 11, the iPhone 11 Pros, maybe even why you're sticking with your iPhone XS, maybe you're even sticking with your iPhone 6S, send me those comments. Shoot me those emails, maccast@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. So here's an interesting thing. I was at work after a few days of having my iPhone 11 Pro with iOS 13, and something interesting happened. An alert popped up on the screen, and it said that the Nest app on my phone had been using my location in the background for the last 3 days and asked if I wanted to change its permission settings. Now, I think I've seen this alert before. I don't think this is anything exclusive or new to iOS 13, but the different part was that this little pop-up contained a map, an image with little points on all the locations that Nest had tracked my location in. Yeah, creepy, right? It was also very, very cool. I was like, oh my God, I didn't know this was on. It's telling me this is on. And not only that, it's showing me all the places now Google knows where I've been, right? Because Nest is Google. And that creeped me out a little bit. It freaked me out a little bit. I was happy to see it. And it was nice that the pop-up alert said, hey, what do you want to do? Do you want to change this? You know, maybe you forgot that this was on. And it was a great reminder. And I was like, this is a cool feature. It's probably one of my favorite features in iOS 13. And so the options that pop up, it says you can change it to while using or never. I tend to prefer the while using because a lot of apps, you know, take advantage of location if it's an app where it makes sense, where it might need location. So Nest, you know, for doing some of its things. I believe the reason for the always on in the background is if you're going to use the feature where you want your house to be a certain temperature when you get home, right? It can query and detect how far away you are, how long it's going to take to get your house to a certain temperature, and then it can kick itself on when. So I understand why they want to do it, but I don't really use that feature and I don't need it. So I just turned it off at that point. I'm like, nope, I don't want Google tracking me through my Nest. You can't have access to my location. And that was a nice little reminder. And as a matter of fact, after I did that one, like 30 minutes or an hour later, another one popped up, very similar, this time for Yelp. And it was like, oh man, Yelp's been using my location in the background. And that had even more little dots on the map. And I went, oh my God, what is going on? Turn this junk off. So that's nice. You might see that alert come up. I thought that was really cool, though. If you want to just review this stuff manually, though, of course you can do that, and it's pretty easy. If you just go into Settings, Privacy, Location Services on your phone, you'll see the list of apps that are using location or can potentially use location and what their current setting is. So it'll show it to you right there, and you can easily change it. You can also look at the little icons located next to each listing, the little arrows, and that will help you see when that app last used your location and how. So if there's a little hollow purple arrow, that means that the app may receive your location information under certain conditions. If it's a solid purple arrow, that means that that app has recently used your location. So that would be, you know, within the last couple hours or minutes or whatever it might be. And then if you see a solid gray arrow, that means that that app has used your location in the last 24 hours. So you can use that to kind of gauge which apps are actually actively using your location, and that's nice. And then you can adjust the settings from here. I also noticed that under Settings, Privacy, Location Services, that little map that was in the dialogue that popped up, that actually can be controlled from this section too, under location alerts. So if you tap on location alerts, there's a little toggle that says show map in location alerts, and you can toggle that on or off. Of course, it was on by default, and I'm assuming this is a new feature of iOS 13, unless I missed this in the past. If I missed it in the past, then go ahead and correct me, but I think the map part is new. I know the dialogue's not new, but I think the map part is new, and it's nice to know that my iPhone is telling on apps that are using my location in the background, because I had totally forgotten about it, and I didn't want those apps doing it, so it was nice to be able to change that. And then finally, just some other things. The iPhone 11, iPhone 11 Pro, and iPhone 11 Max have another new feature that will notify you when you have a non-genuine Apple display installed. So if you've done a repair and the repair place installs a non-genuine Apple display, it will display a message in the lock screen that says unable to verify this iPhone has a genuine display. And it will display that in your lock screen for 4 days. And then after that, that message will move into the settings area under general about. So it seems like iOS 13 has some kind of like tattle features, right? It's going to like tell on certain things that are affecting either your privacy or your performance on your device. And these are kind of, I think, some nice little enhancements. So I hope I never see the display one. I don't plan on ever seeing the display one, but again, the sort of location one I really did enjoy. And then finally, for this week, another new feature of iOS 13 that I had forgotten about until I was, again, listening to some music is the real-time lyrics feature. I don't know how big of a music fan you are. I would say, moderate music fan. I really enjoy listening to music, and oftentimes when you're listening to music, you're like, what are the lyrics in this song, right? We've all heard those songs where you're not really sure, or you've been singing it one way and you're pretty sure you're not singing it correctly, and you want to look up the lyrics. And, you know, of course, in prior versions of the music app, you could do that. You can get the lyrics. Apple's had lyrics in there for a while, but now they have this new real-time lyrics feature, or what I affectionately call karaoke mode, and that is you can open the music app while a song is playing, or before you play a song, and then tap the mini player to bring up the play sheet, the main music sheet, and then down in the lower left, there's a little conversation bubble icon with a couple little quotes in it. If you tap on that, that will bring up the new real-time lyrics feature. And what you'll see is all of the lyrics, pretty large on the screen, grayed out. But if you hit play, or if the song is playing, in real time, as the lyrics are being sung, those lyrics will be highlighted. And it will scroll up, and you can see the lyrics in real time. You can also scroll in this view if you just want to browse through the lyrics, and when you return back to the area that is currently active, or currently the current lyrics that are being sung, it will continue the highlighting and continue to scroll down the screen. If you want to get the old version of the lyrics, just the standard full lyrics view, you can also tap in this view on the more icon, the three little dots, and you'll see an option for view full lyrics. And if you tap on that, you'll just see the plain lyrics, not in real time. You can get the full list. The other nice thing about the real time lyrics view, actually both lyrics views, is that they now display who wrote the song. And I don't remember that being there before. Maybe it was always there and I just never noticed it. But it's very obvious now, especially in the real-time lyrics view. When you get down to the bottom, it says who actually wrote the song, which is really nice because it's not often that the lyricists for songs get much credit. You usually don't know who they are. And of course, Apple and Siri make a great point of, if you want to find out, you can ask Siri, you know, who sings this song, and she will let you know. But now it's nice to see it right there in the lyrics view. And I thought that was pretty cool. So along with this, to kind of promote it, Apple also did add a lyrics to live by feature on Apple Music. And if you go into Apple Music and access that feature, what it has is videos of some artists telling the stories behind their lyrics, which I found pretty interesting. It's interesting to know, you know, we often assume when we read a lyric what the meaning is, but that maybe isn't necessarily always what the artist intended. And so to hear them kind of talking about that was pretty cool. And I thought that was a pretty neat way for Apple to promote this new feature. So that's another thing you can check out, but definitely check out the real-time lyrics feature. I think it's a lot of fun, and I think a lot of people are really, really going to enjoy it. So overall, great week for Apple. Some great new phones, some great new operating systems out to play around with. I'm having fun playing with them. I think you're having fun playing with them as well. And if you find a really cool new feature or something you'd like to share with the community, please, please do that. Send me your emails, your audio comments, maccast@gmail.com. I really would like to try and get some more audio comments. So if you can record a quick clip, 2 to 3 minutes, just use the voice recorder on your iPhone. It works great for that. Send it off to me, shoot it off to me in an email, maccast@gmail.com, and we'll play them on future episodes of the MacCast. But with that, that is going to do it for the show for this week. Before I leave you, I do want to thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, and PDF Pen for iOS, along with PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on all of their great software by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at CacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. You can send your emails, your audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You can also call in on the listener hotline, that phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. You can leave a voicemail there. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. MacGeeksTime.com. And finally, if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or you can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. But that will do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.